The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Don't let anxiety be the norm. Get the powerful, safe audio system for anxiety over at quietbegins.com.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani and I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence so that you can avoid dysfunction, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and show up as your authentic self. Everything I talk about on the show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, I've got something a little special for us today, and that is a outline of my book. Now, that sounds boring when I say it, but before I wrote my book, The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers, back in 2016, 2017, the publisher asked for an outline. And the outline, I had to think about it and really decide what I was going to write about, because all they were asking was for me to write about what I talk about on the show. And if you've been listening a while, or if you've seen my archive of episodes, I talk about a lot of stuff, but I couldn't fit all of that into a book. So what I decided to do to write the book and for the outline was to imagine that I was completely disempowered and I felt like I couldn't control anything in my life. I felt like I had no options. I imagined myself in this position. And where would I go from that point? What would be my first step out of disempowerment? And so I took that idea and I wrote my outline, and the outline just flowed. Now, I was able to do this because there were times in my life, different periods of my life, where I felt this way. And so I looked into my past, from childhood into my teens, into my 20s, 30s, and saw all of these, I don't want to call them revelations, but certainly understandings and realizations about some of the things I was doing that needed to change. And when I figured out what needed to change in my life, I was able to apply those changes and see real results. And so today I'm going to read you the outline and make comments on the outline. I promise I won't bore you with just reading text the whole time, but I'm going to read this to you because I believe, and this is how I wrote it, it is a step-by-step process to get you from a disempowered state to a near fully empowered state. And when I say empowered state, I just mean you have options, you have some control in your life, you are happier, you are more fulfilled, you are more satisfied, you are in a better position in life. I mean, in all areas of life. Because when you're disempowered, I believe that you're more likely to settle for things the way they are. And when you're empowered, you're less likely to settle for things. Or maybe not even that, you are more likely to stand up for yourself. You are more likely to ask for what you want. You are more likely to take risks at the cost of relationships. That doesn't mean it will always cost you the relationship, but you will know yourself so well and what you won't settle for, and know what's right for you and even those around you, that you will make decisions that are right for you. I mean, I say some of these words in my show. You create the life you want by making decisions that are right for you. And how do you know what decisions are right for you? You come from an empowered place. Your decision making comes from a place of what you want for yourself instead of what you fear might happen. Because we all know what happens, well, most of us know what happens when we make fear-based decisions. We usually end up keeping what we don't want in our lives because we're afraid of what might happen. We're afraid of the consequences, which is why I've said in the past, and maybe I'll talk about this, maybe not in this episode, where when you're about to make a decision and you have some fear around it, you ask yourself, what would I do or say if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? That gives you the empowered answer. And when you have the empowered answer, your next choice is to do the empowered thing or say the empowered words or not. This is the kind of stuff that I've tested in my own life over the years and have learned many, many things. I've learned so much about myself. I've gotten rid of so much dysfunction just by asking myself that question in so many other ways I've asked myself that question. Or just choosing to see the fear, face the fear, and walk through it, and then take the consequences as they come. Even when I knew the consequences were dire, and I totally believe the consequences were going to be terrible and probably damaging to me, and I did it anyway. That's a whole new level of decision-making that I don't necessarily push on anyone. But I have practiced this. I have learned by making decisions that were very difficult that I, quote, knew would bring some sort of emotional or even physical harm to me, and never received the harm I thought I was going to get. Because this is what happens. We go through life thinking we're going to get harmed in a certain way by a certain person for a certain thing. And when we decide to do something different and we expect the harm to come our way and it doesn't, we learn something new. We learned that our reality wasn't what we thought it was, or we learned that what we believed was going to happen never does and probably never would. That doesn't mean it's always true. That's another thing I had to learn throughout the years, is that sometimes what we believe is going to happen actually does happen. Then we're on a whole new level of learning and growth. Because when you do something and you believe it's going to happen, but you do it anyway, then it happens, then you get these results that you don't want, you still grow. You still move through it in some way, unless you don't. If you don't, then there was probably some serious injury you suffered. This can also happen. This can be an emotional injury, a physical injury, a financial injury. A family or friend or romantic partner doesn't like you anymore or hates you. All of these things could be true. And I think many of us go through life, at least the ones who aren't getting what they want in life, we go through life fearing we'll lose friendships and partnerships and family or jobs or a number of things, so we decide not to do or say what we really want to do or say, which keeps us limited. It keeps us in a space of not getting everything we want. I mean, not just, you know, extra extravagant stuff, just the simple stuff. Sometimes you want a 25-cent raise at work, but you're afraid to ask, so you don't, because you think you'll lose your job. And when that happens, maybe you'll never get that raise. Maybe you don't want to risk it. And so what we end up doing is placing value on our fears instead of on our wants and needs. You know, sometimes we need this stuff. It may not be a 25-cent raise. Maybe you need a $5 raise per hour, or a $10,000 or $100,000. Who knows? The point is, sometimes we need things that we are afraid to ask for, because asking for it might have some risk involved, so we don't ask. And that keeps us where we are. And where is that? I mean, if we really need it and we're afraid to ask for it, then where we are is always in need and always in lack. So we get stuck in this space in life that really doesn't go anywhere. And a lot of the times it's our own doing. It's our own inability to ask for what we want, stand up for who we are, and be in integrity and in alignment with what we value most. And if we do not follow that path where we do stand up for ourselves, where we do take action based on what we want and or need, and we know it's the right decision because we asked ourselves, what would I do or say if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? If we did all of that, then we would end up with a lot different results in life. And 90% of the questions that I get are typically relationship-based, in the sense that somebody wants the relationship to be different. They want to be treated differently. They want to be happier. They want their partner to understand, or their friend or family member to understand what they're doing is either hurtful or just not helpful or healthy. And I look at all these relationship questions I get, and much of the time it's someone who is either afraid to express themselves or speak the entire truth because it might hurt the other person, or they might take it the wrong way, could lead to a breakup, could lead to a divorce, could lead to never talking to each other again. A lot of the time it's that, and a lot of the time it is afraid to say anything because of what they'll lose. Even if they lose the relationship, they'll lose their house, they'll lose their finances, they'll lose access to the kids, they'll lose a bunch of stuff. And that I would call a fear-based decision of what I'm going to lose, so I'm not going to bring it up because it could happen. So there's every single angle here that when we make decisions in life, that we could face loss, that we are taking a risk. I like to look at life as the risks that we take that lead to the results that we get are worth taking even when we experience loss. Not everyone is ready to do that. Not everyone wants to do that. I have done that. So when you hear my perspective, that's where I come from. So I have taken these risks. I have risked relationships. I have risked jobs. I have risked finances. I have risked everything I can think of. Family. That was the hardest one, risking my relationship with certain family members, because I chose to stand up and do what was right and stand in my own integrity and honor myself with love for them, which is my goal all the time. I want to honor myself and stand up for myself with love for the other person, to show them that I'm not against them. I'm for me and for them, but I do come first. If that sounds arrogant or egotistical, it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be self-loving and self-compassionate and self-caring, self-supportive. And if you aren't in that space and you keep getting results that you don't want, then maybe something I say in this episode today will be helpful. Like I said, I'm going to go through the outline of my book, which is basically this chapter talks about this, this chapter talks about that, but I'm not going to read it that way. I'm going to read you what I wrote in the outline so I can comment on it for two reasons, really. A, to find out if I still feel the same way, because, you know, year after year after year, we learn new things. I try to improve myself. I try to learn more about myself. I try to learn more about others. I coach people. I learn new things about them, and they tell me things that are a challenge to them and, of course, a challenge to me, but we work through those things and we figure them out and we get to a new level. So sometimes there's new information that comes along that may not be updated in my blog or my books from the past. That's why I like to go over this stuff every now and then. But the outline, again, is the path from disempowerment to empowerment, at least the way I saw it in 2017, and we'll see if that stands today. And hopefully what I share with you today is helpful to you. If you haven't read the book, this will be the very summarized Cliff Notes version. And if you have read the book, maybe you can consider this an addendum. It's called The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers, a straight offshoot of this show, but in paper form, if you're looking for it. Otherwise, just listen to the show. You don't have to buy it. I'm not here to sell it to you. I'm just here to share the information with you, and hopefully you can use it. We'll get started as soon as we come back after this. We are wrapping up 2020 as we record this. It is today is the day before I released the recording, 12/26/2020, the day after Christmas, and it has been quite a year. And one of the things that I really try to avoid this entire year were two things: talking about COVID and politics. And I got close in one episode, and I backed off, and I never really went there again. But the reason I mention this stuff is because a lot of us have been through a tumultuous year. We've been through a lot. It has been my show's name, The Overwhelmed Brain. We've all been experiencing an overwhelmed brain this year because a lot has been going on. And because of that, services like BetterHelp are much needed and much welcome, because we might need help talking about this stuff. And yes, I haven't addressed most of what was happening in the world throughout the year, but I believed we were way too overexposed to it. I didn't think you needed to hear any more about what was happening in the world, because you could just turn on the news and find out for yourself. But I'm hoping that whatever you need to express, or any stress that's built up in you, I'm hoping that has been released. I'm hoping that you've been able to process it. And if not, then maybe BetterHelp is for you. Maybe you do need to talk about this stuff, but to an unbiased, non-judgmental person that can really help you release the emotional buildup that may have occurred in you. So if you have had a buildup of emotional energy because all this stuff is going on, you're losing Facebook friends, politics, and COVID, then maybe BetterHelp is for you. And I'm not saying that that's the only reason they're here, but they are a great service that helps you find out what interferes with your happiness or whatever is preventing you from achieving your goals. BetterHelp, they assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. In case you never heard of them before, it's a place where you can connect in a safe and private online environment, making it very convenient, where you can get professional counseling. I mean, it's not like a self-help show. It's not like my book I was talking about. This is where you can talk without ever leaving your home. You can do it on the phone. You can do it on your computer. You can send a message to your counselor anytime, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. You can even do video calls. So if you wanted to set up a weekly video session, you can do that as well. If you are experiencing any type of emotional buildup, emotional stress, anything that's going on in your life, depression, anxiety, sleeping, trauma, anger, everything you share is confidential. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. I highly recommend you check out BetterHelp today. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Go to BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain, and you'll get 10% off your first month. BetterHelp.com/brain. Welcome back. Like I said, I'm going to go through the outline of my book, which I believe gives you the step-by-step process of going from disempowerment to empowerment, and hopefully I'm right. I haven't read this in apparently 4 years, since 2016. I'm looking at the dates on my files, and I was writing this stuff way back in, looks like August, early 2016. So it's been almost 5 years or 4.5 years since I wrote this, and let's find out if this is still good step-by-step information. So here is the outline, and I'm just going to read it to you and make comments throughout. TOB book outline. Everything you do today matters. How you show up in the world today determines whether tomorrow is going to be stressful and filled with anxiety or fear. The first step into a better tomorrow is to get into alignment with what's most important to you. Once you know what's most important to you in all the major areas of your life, you can start making more focused, smarter, and healthier decisions that don't sabotage your path. This involves taking small steps to honor those important things we call values. Every time you honor yourself, you gain more confidence. That is true. I'm going to stop right here. One of the things I noticed over my life is that every time I stood up for myself, every time I wanted to say something that I knew would be controversial, but I just knew it was the right thing to say, I wanted to stand in integrity and come from an honorable place, it always made me more confident afterward. And all that means is I was able to survive that test or survive that challenge. And because I did, because I knew I could do it, I knew I could do it again. This is just like after my back surgery in like 2012, I had some back surgery. And the day I got out of the hospital, I was in there for 5 days. It was an extended stay for what I was going through. But the day after I got out of the hospital, I had 4 flights of stairs to go up to our condo in Oregon when I was married. And I just looked up the first flight and I didn't know if I could make it. I didn't know if I could make the first step. And we were in Oregon and it was cold and it was just starting to rain. So here I am at the bottom step, not believing I would be able to make it up 4 flights of stairs, let alone 1 stair. And it started raining, and that was the incentive. I decided, that's it. I'm going to do this. And I just took the first step. It was difficult. I lifted 1 foot, put it on the step, and then lifted myself up, and I made it. I mean, that one step felt so empowering. And I told myself, if I can make 1 step, I can make the rest. I knew it because I figured out it was possible. If I didn't make that first step, the rest wouldn't be possible. But I took the step, and I did it. And because I did it, I was incentivized to do the rest. I knew I could do it. Once you know something, once you know you can do it, you can do it again. And this is what I mean when I say, when you take small steps to honor those important things called values, this is my analogy. When I had back surgery and I took that first step, it was so empowering. It felt so good. Even though I was just weak, I don't remember if I was in a lot of pain, but I knew I was very, very weak. I might have been on morphine, so I didn't have much pain going on. But it was scary, too, because here I am doing a movement that I have not done since surgery, and I did it. So take that first step, and you'll build confidence to take that step over and over again, or another step after that. So I'm going to move on. The honoring part can be hard, because you may be used to making decisions based on how other people will respond and not for what's in your best interest. I think that's an important thing to remember. The honoring part can be hard because you're used to making decisions based on how other people respond. I've done that most of my life. I don't know about you, but I used to worry about if people will like me if I do this or if they'll be mad at me. And this is one of those risks. You take a risk knowing that it could upset someone, but you know it's the right step. You know it's the right decision. You know it's what you need to do. And this is where you might make a decision at the risk of losing the relationship. It's not for everyone. I'm not giving you this as advice. I'm just saying your life turns out a lot differently when you make empowered decisions instead of decisions based on fear. Moving on, learning to honor yourself is the most important step in the personal empowerment process. If you can't commit to a tiny step forward in honoring yourself, you won't be able to get to a point of true healing and growth. Well, I'm going to say that's still true. I'm going to say that when you learn to honor yourself, that's where healing and growth is. However, I don't think it's the only place of healing and growth. There's a lot of ways to gain momentum in your healing and growth, and it's not just in honoring yourself. However, when I say that, I think, you know, if you don't honor yourself first and don't support yourself first, you might be stuck. You might get in that rut. So I could maybe argue this if I really got into it, but I still believe that it is important to honor yourself first and foremost. And like I said earlier, honor yourself with love for others then you're creating equality across the board. I mean, this is the old saying, put your oxygen mask on first. If you don't have enough oxygen, you're not going to be able to help anybody else. If you don't love yourself, if you don't show yourself compassion, it's going to be hard to show that to other people. So this is where I would look at honoring yourself as showing yourself love and compassion and support and making sure you're good. You know, you may not be fully healed. You may have a while to go and you might have a lot of things to work through, but you do have to get to that point where you have some reserves. If you show yourself love and support and compassion, that will build your reserves. That will give you some abundance to share with others. Just a thought. Moving on, the path of life will be forged by your decisions. The decisions you make will either be from an empowered place or one of fear, which I've talked about. Every decision forges the path before you. When your decisions are based on the fear of the consequences, you will become less and less happy every day. When they are based on what you really want for yourself, without fear, happiness and satisfaction are almost always the result. I'm going to backpedal on what I just said a little bit because of what I've learned over the past few years about this. I wrote, when they are based on what you really want for yourself, without fear, happiness and satisfaction are almost always the result. I'm going to say that's true because I put in the qualifier almost, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's exactly what I said earlier, that when you make empowered decisions where they're based on what you really want for yourself, happiness and satisfaction are almost always the result, but not always. So this is important to remember. This is the risk factor when you're making decisions, is that you may not get the results that you want. People have written to me and say, you know, I made a decision with my sister-in-law or my brother or whatever. And now that I've spoken up and said, you know, what I really needed to say, I can't see my nephews and nieces anymore. They blocked me from them. That's a hard one. That's very difficult because if you are going through life honoring yourself and being in alignment with your values and your decisions affect who you can and cannot see, especially people that really have no choice but to follow their parents, like your nieces and nephews or your grandkids, it's going to be tough to honor yourself. And this is one of those times, if you're ever in that situation, where you might have to make some sacrifices. Now, that doesn't mean you sacrifice not seeing those you love. I'm talking about the internal sacrifice of not being who you really want to be around certain people. Sometimes this is necessary, and I get this. I understand this. It might be something you have to do in order to keep certain relationships in your life. All I mean by that is sometimes you can't be yourself around certain people because you will lose relationships that you want to keep. And this can be the qualifier for your decision making. If there are relationships you want to keep and you know that one of the results of your honoring yourself is losing a relationship that you definitely don't want to lose, honoring yourself might not be the best decision. It pains me to say that. It really does. But when there are other people involved, you simply have to do certain things to keep certain relationships, and one of those things might be getting out of integrity with who you are. That is not very empowering, but sometimes the outcome must outweigh the process. I don't know if I said that right, but sometimes in order to keep what you want or get what you want, you have to move out of alignment with who you are and how you want to show up. That doesn't mean manipulation. That doesn't mean lying. It just means you know that certain actions will keep you from getting certain results. And if those results are a relationship that you don't want to end, then you might have to show up in a way that is a compromise to yourself. There is some sacrifice, there is some compromise in life when there are relationships that you don't want to get rid of. I mean, I'm all about honoring yourself, staying in alignment with your integrity, even at the cost, even at the risk of losing relationships. But not everyone is ready to do that. Not everyone wants to do that. I just know that when I've done it throughout my life, the results have always been positive for me. Doesn't mean it's going to work for you. It's just the way I've learned to be and a way I've learned to function in the world, and it has worked out for me. But I understand that not everybody can do that because some relationships are very important. The only caveat about losing relationships, let's just say that you no longer have access to someone's children and you want to see those children, but you can't. Children grow up. They get to that point where they're making their own decisions, they're driving their own cars, and they're talking to you in a different way because they're no longer influenced by their parents or authority figures. So you will see them just not in their kid form, and you may not want that. I just say that because sometimes we are restricted from seeing certain people because of certain events that have happened, and we think, oh, that's it, I'll never see him again. That's not true. I mean, they grow up, but yes, you will miss some of those early years, and that is upsetting for a lot of people, and I understand that. So let me move on here. As you get comfortable honoring yourself more and more, you'll find that those around you will have to make decisions themselves. They will either support you fully, honoring you, honoring yourself, or be completely unsupportive, hoping you change back to the person you used to be so that they can be the person they are used to being. That is a packed paragraph, and I could probably have a whole episode on that, which I probably have already. But the gist of that is, some people are used to controlling you. Some people are used to rolling over you and getting their way with you, that they don't really have to make the hard decisions themselves because they'll just use you to get what they want. So as you get more comfortable honoring yourself, you'll find that those around you who used to take advantage of you will now have to make their own decisions and do their own thing without your helping them do it. Helping them in a way that is being manipulated by them. We don't necessarily want that to happen. So if they support you fully, then they're honoring you, honoring yourself. They want you to honor yourself because they care about you. But if they don't support you, they want you to be the person that they want you to be so that you will show up in the way they need you to be. And that can be sometimes manipulative, that can be sometimes unintentional, but you just have to watch out where they're coming from and how they are treating you and how you're showing up in their life as well. You'll find out very quickly who really loves you and wants you to be happier. That is true. Those who are opposed to you improving or changing yourself are typically happy with the relationship they had with you in the first place. These are the people that are getting some need or function met by you being dysfunctional. When you cater to other people's dysfunction, you quickly learn how to be unhappy and get to a point where life just doesn't satisfy you anymore. Then you look around and you can't figure out why you're so unhappy. You get so buried in fulfilling the needs of others that you forget how to fulfill them for you. Or you're just scared of the consequences of fulfilling your own needs. Either way, you end up making decisions that are not empowering and will only bring you more misery. There are levels of misery you may be willing to survive, and perhaps misery is an inappropriate word to use here, but eventually, living for others only can become quite miserable. After you've learned to honor yourself without the fear of consequences, you start to feel good in many areas of life. However, you find that you still have emotional triggers that pop up, holding you back from feeling great. These emotional triggers are all the childhood beliefs that you carried into your adult world and into your jobs and relationships. These beliefs about how the world operates hold you back from so many things that you not only want, but wholly deserve. They create misconceptions and false perceptions that keep you from going after what you really want. Something as simple as your boss screaming at you, which really isn't that simple, becomes months of fear of going back to work in hopes you don't get yelled at again. When you carry these kinds of fear with you all of your life, you pass up more and more opportunities because you are afraid of what might happen. That's where anxiety and emotional triggers come from, because of something that might happen. But the only reason you believe something might happen is probably because when you were younger, it did happen. This event, whatever it was, got imprinted in your mind and became a fear that you bring with you everywhere you go. It's like wearing a bulletproof vest all the time. You truly believe that there are people out there who can hurt you, so you wear your armor. Emotional triggers can cause you to say and do things that might cause others to not like being around you. You can develop judgmental and critical thoughts about other people that put them down or make them feel bad. You can't control their emotions, but knowing what you do that triggers them is a great way to understand yourself and what triggers you. Relationships are the perfect mirror to deflect the dysfunctions we bring into them. You'll always be attracted to people that are the same level of healing as you. In other words, if you're still carrying around pain and hurt from the past, you'll be attracted to someone that somehow comforts that pain and hurt so that you can feel better. All right, I'm going to stop right there. I said a lot because I wanted to read through this because I could comment on every single paragraph, but I wanted to stop there talking about where relationships are the perfect mirror to reflect the dysfunctions we bring into them. We all know this is true. We all know relationships, our partners in life, even our family and friends, they're all the perfect mirror for us in how we're showing up. If they're treating us badly in some way, then what are we doing that is somehow facilitating that treatment? When I say that, I don't want you to take the blame for it. I don't want you to think you're at fault. I want you to ask yourself, if you're being treated badly, is there something that you're doing in any way, shape, or form that facilitates it? I'm usually really careful around this area because there are true victims of violence, emotional abuse, domestic abuse, that I don't want to say, hey, you're doing this to yourself. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I am saying is that there might be a part of you inside that has developed a tolerance for the type of behavior that you're getting, and you may not know how to get out of it, but to figure out how you may be showing up that facilitates the bad behavior also gives you the power to change how you show up. And let me just give you a minor example. Let's just say that there's a couple that's experiencing emotional abuse. One person is doing emotionally abusive behavior, and the other one is trying harder and harder to please that person. This is a very common scenario in a lot of emails that I get. The victim of emotional abuse will write to me and say, you know, I'm trying harder, I'm doing everything they ask, I've given up so much, and I'm giving up more. And so I look at that and see that you have one person that's being abusive, and you have the other person that's trying their hardest to be treated right and showing the other person love and support. But I also see the victim of abuse not saying that if you do that again, I'm leaving. I don't see any of that. They may not have the resources to do that. They may not have the confidence. They may not know where they're going to go. I completely get that. I'm not saying that you should automatically just say, you better not do that anymore or I'm out of here. But there has to be an acknowledgement of something that you're not doing in order to understand why you keep getting mistreated over and over again or disrespected. There's got to be a question you ask yourself, what am I doing that is facilitating this behavior? Not, what am I doing that deserves this behavior? That's not the right question. Because as soon as you ask that question, you're automatically thinking worse of yourself as if there were a reason you deserved it. So that's not the right question at all. You don't deserve bad behavior. Even if you were doing the bad behavior, you don't deserve bad behavior in the sense of somebody you might be treating badly should stand up to you and say, hey, you need to stop treating me badly or else I'm out of here. They might have to say that, but that's still a healthier way to respond than having mistreatment back and forth. That's another issue for another episode, but let's stay on this subject where the emotionally abusive person is doing behavior to the victim of the emotional abuse. And the victim has developed higher levels of tolerance and higher levels of resilience for the bad behavior instead of standing up and saying, no, I'm not going to take this anymore. Because again, they may not have the resources. And those resources are what I talk about all the time. Your self-worth, your self-esteem, and of course all the self-love and self-compassion that you need to give yourself to the point where you know what you deserve. And if you are treated any less than what you deserve, you won't have it. That's the point of full empowerment. You will not tolerate bad behavior. That's a really empowered place that feels good. But the problem is some people have been disempowered a lot of their lives and they've learned a lot of dysfunctions in childhood and they bring those dysfunctions into their adult relationships and now they're in this situation they feel like they're stuck in. So how this relates to relationships being the perfect mirror is that our dysfunctions usually complement someone else's dysfunctions. It usually fits like a puzzle. We have a part of that puzzle inside of us, and who they are is a part of that puzzle as well. And in order to break that puzzle apart so that you have a clearer picture, a bigger picture of what's going on, you have to figure out how you fit into it. If you've been a people pleaser all your life and you're trying harder and harder to someone who can't be pleased, maybe you can look at your people pleasing as a dysfunction. Doesn't mean people pleasing itself is always a dysfunction. There are times when people pleasing can be useful. In fact, there are times when any dysfunction can be useful. I could probably argue many dysfunctions that can be useful. But when they are not useful is when your energy is getting drained and you are feeling more and more disempowered. So this is all I mean. Let's use our relationships to gauge that when we are being mistreated or disrespected or unhappy for some reason, how do we contribute to that? Do we have a dysfunction that contributes or complements what they're doing? Are they an addict and we're an enabler? Are they an abuser and we are a people pleaser? There are ways to look at this that you can find the improper balancing that's going on, because that is sort of a balancing act. If they're an addict and you're an enabler, then you're balancing the relationship. And if one of you stops being the addict or one of you stops being the enabler, the balance is off and it throws everything into a tizzy. And now you have to figure out a new relationship and a new way of relating. And then suddenly the dysfunction can maybe disappear. Or maybe you find out that there's not as much compatibility as you thought there was because you didn't realize you were unconsciously creating this unhealthy balance. You know, I'm all about balance, but the unhealthy balance of complementing each other's dysfunction. That's a dysfunctional balance, I guess. If you're creating a dysfunctional balance, then it's important that you understand what that is so that you don't stay in that dysfunctional space. It's time to move out of that space if that's the case. So that might take some introspection or extrospection, looking outside of you or reflecting inside, whatever you need to do to get a better understanding of that. All right, I've given you a lot to chew on right now. I've got more to go, maybe a page and a half more to go. It's not too long. What I'm going to do is take a quick break, and when I come back, I'm going to say my thank yous and goodbyes and probably just extend the outro a little bit, the end of the show where I play the music. And I'll just talk through the rest of this and we'll end the show after that. And hopefully this will be part of, I don't know, your new year. Things maybe need to change or things need to get better or maybe just improve things that are already good. Who knows? I just wanted to end this year on an empowering note, so that you had things to think about, things to work on, or just wanted a break from all that political and COVID talk. We'll be right back after this. I'll say my thank yous and goodbyes after this, and then we'll go over the rest of what I hope to be a very informational and educational episode for you. I'll be back in a moment. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain, the special episode, end of 2020. Glad you are here. If you are listening to this in 2030 or some other time, thank you too. Doesn't mean you have to listen to it the day it comes out on Sunday, but hopefully this show is around in 2030. That would be great, another 10 years. But thanks again for tuning in. I would like to thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain, and get 10% off your first month of that great, great service. And I also want to thank the patrons of the week, the financial backers of this show. Anyone can become a financial backer, and I'm so glad and grateful when you give back to the show. So these are the folks that have found value in the show and decided to give back monetarily, and that is amazing to me. It blows my mind sometimes where I see some people come on and give back that way, because not everyone can do that, and those who can have chosen to. So if you haven't and you wanted to, believe me, I'm grateful for you too. Doesn't mean you have to give back, but if you can, great. These are the patrons this week: Leslie and Jamie and Angel and Jennifer and Chris and Holly. Michelle, you're a new patron. So good to have you on board. Thank you. Kay and DS. DS decided to become a generous monthly contributor. I noticed that this week and was shocked because it happened, I think, the day before Christmas. And I am just surprised and warmed by your generosity. I mean, for all of you, of course. DS, I am so grateful for your contribution. And thank you for joining the membership program. I appreciate you. Christine gave a generous donation, a one-time donation, and I am grateful for those as well. Christine, thank you so much. I can't tell you how grateful I am and honored that you are supporting the show this way. And I'm so glad that you are getting value and are able to do this for the show. Thank you, Christine. And of course, Angela and James and Amy, all of you, thank you, patrons and those who donated. I am grateful for you. If you find value in the show and you'd like to give back, head over to moretob.com and there are options there. And of course, if you do join the patron program, you can have access to the patron membership site, which I have all kinds of private episodes and workbooks and worksheets and a video archive over there. And that is my way of giving you more because you are giving to me and the show. Thank you again, patrons. Also, I want to mention Love and Abuse, the Love and Abuse podcast I've been doing since February of 2019, and talk about unhealthy balance in a relationship. That is the podcast where I talk about emotional abuse, control, and manipulation, and how to avoid it or work with it or work through it, or talk to your loved ones in a way that helps you not continue to facilitate bad behavior. That doesn't mean it always works. It just means I'm giving you some tools over there. So if you are dealing with an emotionally abusive person or a difficult relationship of any sort, head over to loveandabuse.com and maybe you'll get some good insights over there. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. All right, like I said, I want to finish up this outline of the book, The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers. For those of you who are looking for it, you will find it on Amazon. You will find it on my website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And you will be surprised that the cover looks nothing like my branding. This was not my choice. This was the publisher's choice. It's a pink cover with arrows. I don't know how I feel about it. But I guess it is what it is. And I'm not saying anything against the publisher. I am blessed that they reached out to me and they paid for all the editing and all the putting it together and distributing. I am so grateful. Thank you, Ulysses Press. And at the same time, I wish I had a design decision on the book cover. But that's okay. I am still grateful it's out there. And speaking of which, next year, The Overwhelmed Brain itself is going through some branding changes. It'll still be called The Overwhelmed Brain. It'll still have kind of that beach, peaceful feeling and scene. But I will be changing the thumbnail for the podcast and the website. You've probably already seen if you've been on there, theoverwhelmedbrain.com. You'll see the new font and the new branding, which I have had professionally done. And it was well worth it because when I created this stuff back in 2013, I just threw it together, and it's been that way ever since. So I finally had it done professionally, and I think you'll dig the results. But I tell you that because if you're looking for the old graphic in 2021, you won't see it anymore. Or if you do, it'll be in the archives of the internet. But you will see a new graphic. It'll still be a beach, but it'll be a nice font and a nice design. And I really appreciate all the work that's been done, and I want to thank Perla for doing that work. Thank you so much. I am so grateful for everything you've done on those graphics, and I hope you like them as a listener of this show, and when you see them, hopefully you'll say, whoa, those look professional, instead of what you see today. Although what I have today is, you know, it's passable. It's fine. Some people love it. Some people will say, don't change a thing, but sometimes you got to go through changes in life. Sometimes you have to take risks, what I was talking about earlier. And that gets you to the next level. That incentivizes you to take the next step because you took the first one and you made it. So let's take this step and see where it goes. It's only the branding. It doesn't change much of anything except how it looks and how it appeals to the general public. I hope you like it. Anyway, let me finish up with what I was talking about. We just talked about relationships are the perfect mirror. I'm going to continue from there. When you look to someone else to fill what's missing in you, you create a codependent relationship that survives on fulfilling the dysfunctional needs in each other. Also, the opposite is true. What you fear most having in your life will show up in a way that causes you more pain and hurt. The first few months are always the best, that is, until there's a settling down and you are seeking more than just filling the needs for each other. So I said a lot there, especially when you look to someone else to fill what's missing in you, you create a codependent relationship that survives on fulfilling the dysfunctional needs of each other. That is a lot to unpack, but let me give you a simple example of that. I used to get my happiness from my partner, and she would be the sole provider for that happiness. When you rely on someone as the sole resource or provider for something that you are missing or lacking in yourself, what you end up doing is draining the other person as you gain that in yourself, because it's a continuous draw. What you're doing is draining the other person of what you want from them and putting it in you, so you're feeling better in you and they are starting to feel drained and worse in themselves. So this is what I mean when you look to someone else to fill what's missing in you. It's not exactly my definition of a codependent relationship. I should probably explain that. Codependence is like what I was talking about earlier. You are complementing each other's dysfunctions. The enabler complements the addict. The people pleaser complements the emotionally abusive person. It sounds weird when I say it, but it happens, and it's actually bonding for some people, but the bond is so draining, it's so dysfunctional, that it becomes probably what's known as a traumatic bond, where there's a lot of love and a lot of hurt all mixed together, and you start equating love with the hurt, and you think that's normal. You think that's the way it should be, but it's not. It's not normal. It's not the way it should be. It's not supposed to be normal. So it's better to recognize this stuff, acknowledge your dysfunctions so that you can work on those dysfunctions so you're not in a codependent situation anymore. So there were two different subjects there, fulfilling what's missing in you and codependence. But I wanted to mention those two things. Then I went on to say what you fear most having in your life will show up in a way that causes you more pain and hurt. The first few months are almost always the best, that is, until there's a settling down and you are seeking more than just filling of needs for each other. And after settling, you want to share life and more experiences, but if you have a foundation of codependency, meaning I can't be happy without you doing the things that make me happy, it's very hard to enjoy life with each other. A codependent relationship can work, but it involves both people agreeing to the roles they are filling. A good example of this is when you have a very helpful people-pleasing person with a highly dependent, selfish person. Okay, here's a good example of a codependent relationship. The people-pleaser feels good helping and pleasing their partner, and the selfish person feels good getting what they want from the pleaser. So that's a great example of a codependent situation. The people-pleaser steps in the role of doing a lot of the things for the other person, and the other person's sort of selfish and doesn't do a lot of things back. If the people pleaser is okay with that, and the selfish person is okay with that, then you can have a somewhat dysfunctional but maybe good relationship because you both agreed to the roles. But it requires agreement. So if you can agree to the role that you're playing, and the other person can agree to it as well, and you don't complain about it anymore because you've agreed on it, then it can work. Not a lot of people can do that. Not a lot of people want to do that. There's usually enough dysfunction where at least one person can't take it anymore, but they continue to take it, which is why it continues to stay dysfunctional a lot of the times. But that could be good to know. I mean, maybe you're in a situation where you don't like what's happening, but if you chose to accept it, it might work out for you. Just like I said on a previous episode, I know someone who is in a relationship with an alcoholic. He likes to drink. He's not going to quit, and she doesn't like to be around him when he drinks. So they live separately, and when he drinks, she doesn't come around. And she only sees him when he's not drunk, and it works out for them, and they're still together after years. It can work. The roles just have to be agreed upon. So there's that. And I know I skipped over one of the comments I made in this outline, which is what you fear most having in your life will show up in a way that causes you more pain and hurt. I said that because what we fear is usually what we resist, and what we resist, it's usually what persists and amplifies. And I've talked about that many times. What we are afraid of, what we fear, and especially what we resist will continue to happen because what we're doing is putting energy toward that topic or subject. We are putting energy toward that person. If we don't want to see our abusive brother or father or mother, and we do everything we can to avoid them, then all you're doing is thinking about ways to avoid them, which means you're always thinking about them, which means you probably haven't done anything to tell them that you don't want anything to do with them. Maybe. I might be wrong about this, but in my life, I went the longest time avoiding and resisting seeing my dysfunctional alcoholic stepfather. And because I did that, I feared being around him. I resisted wanting to associate with him. I hoped he wouldn't show up. And because I did that, my life was just full of fear. All I did was spend time thinking about not seeing him instead of just enjoying life as it was. So I decided one day that I was finally going to face him and finally say what I needed to say. It came as a surprise, which some of these things usually do, because he showed up at my mom's house when I didn't expect it, and she didn't expect it, and I decided for the first time to stand up to him. And it was scary, and it was a risk, and I decided to take the risk. And all I said was, "You're not welcome here." It was so scary. Even saying it now, I remember that moment. I felt like a little boy in front of him, but I said it. And I knew I was going to get punched in the face, and he didn't do it. This is one of those things that we make up. Sometimes we believe something's going to happen, and it doesn't. And when it doesn't, we get surprised, and we realize, oh, all this time, I thought that this person would do this, and they didn't, and all this time, I could have said what I wanted to say. And that day, I did, and he shrugged his shoulders and said, okay, and then he left. And that was it. And that gave me the confidence to do that again if I ever had to. Take that next step. Give me forward momentum so that I had the resources next time if I ever had to face it. But from that point on, my fear went away. My resistance went away. I didn't think about it all the time. I didn't care because I finally overcame it that day. So that's what I mean. When you fear something in your life, it'll show up in a way that causes you more pain and hurt because your resistance to what you fear creates it, it exacerbates it, it amplifies the fear, it amplifies the worry. So how do you do it? We have to face that, and we have to figure out what we need to do to get over it. And that might mean taking a risk. It might mean saying or doing something that has consequences. And what would happen if you had no fear of the consequences? What would you really do or say? That's a great question to ask yourself. All right, we're almost done, I promise. The next thing in this outline is relationships take up a major portion of our lives and are the number one method of letting you know what you have to work on. I get emails every week on relationship issues. Some of them seem like they have no hope, and others just need a boost. But all of them suffer from the same thing, the reflection of what needs to heal in us. And even though relationships are the key to learning the most about ourselves, we typically have to be alone long enough to be happy being with ourselves first. We have to reach a place of self-compassion and self-honor in order to feel empowered to make decisions that are right for us. Once we're able to get to this place using the processes outlined in this book, satisfaction and happiness will find us because we are showing the world that we are comfortable in our own skin. And we're also being okay being ourselves because we've learned how to find strength in vulnerability. Choosing to be your authentic self is where all of your power is. Every decision you make will either strengthen or weaken you. So the sacrifices must be weighed each time. I actually love that line. Each decision you make will either strengthen or weaken you. So the sacrifices must be weighed each time. That is an empowering statement to me because when it comes time to making decisions, especially the hard ones, I ask myself two questions. Not with every decision, but a lot of the times I will ask myself, is this decision going to strengthen me or weaken me? And is this decision from an empowered place or a place of fear? And the answer that comes up usually guides my path. And my decisions are almost always based on what I value most. If I value weekends off and I choose to do a project that takes up my weekends, I'm not going to be happy. The project might be something that I've been wanting to do for a long time, but if I value weekends over a lot of other things, then I might not be happy because I'm using my weekends for something else. There's more of that where I talk about values in other episodes at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. I talk about it in the self-sabotage workbook that I sell over there. But the whole point is when you are in alignment with your values and you follow through and you make decisions based on those values, you will almost always be more fulfilled and more happy most of the time because you're in alignment when you're out of alignment, there's a dysfunctional balance, because maybe there's a dysfunction that's complementing some other dysfunction in life, or you're choosing to make decisions based on fear and you're getting results that you don't want. There's all kinds of ways we end up what we don't want. I've covered a lot of the ways that we can end up with what we do want today, but I do so telling you there are risks. There's always risks, and I understand that when you're not ready to take the risk, then you're not ready. You just have to wait until you're ready, and sometimes that comes sooner than later, and sometimes you reach a breaking point and you take the risk, and then you find out the results and you learn something new. I heard today that a lot of people think about taking action, and then there are others that take action. And it doesn't matter if you're smart or stupid. I'm not calling anyone out there stupid. I'm just saying that some people probably aren't as smart as other people. And it really doesn't matter, because no matter how educated or uneducated or smart or not smart you are, the people who take action get the results faster and learn faster and are usually more successful. It's usually how it works. That's why I've chosen to take action instead of thinking about taking action. If you think you're going to fail, you probably will. And if you take action, you could fail there too. So you might as well take action and find out if you succeed. Because if you think you're going to fail and you never do anything, you're going to fail. That's how I look at things. I know that's personal growth 101, but that is something I like to keep in mind as I move forward. And let me move forward with the rest of this, which is only one more paragraph. I'm going to tag it on to what I just said. Every decision you make will either strengthen or weaken you, so the sacrifices must be weighed each time. Just real quick, that's what I was talking about earlier. Sometimes you have to weigh the risks. Do I want to risk this? If you don't want to risk it, then you make a different decision. If it's okay to risk it, then you move toward your own empowerment and you take the risk because it's in alignment with who you are at the deepest level. You can live a peaceful and happier life. It will take some small steps that feel like giant leaps, but you can get to that place of self-empowerment so that you can create the life you want and not the one that you end up with because you chose not to be your true self. And that is my outline. That is the outline for the Overwhelmed Brain book, which became a lot more than the outline, of course. And I wanted to read this on the air to go over what I said and make sure that a lot of this still applies, and also read it to you in case you never saw the book or you wanted that addendum to talk about some of the stuff I talked about in the book. And the book gets into a lot of other stuff. And again, I'm not here to sell you on that book. You certainly can listen to the last 7 years of episodes and you've read the book. But the book condenses everything into one place. But this is a good way to end this episode and end this year. Some small steps will feel like giant leaps, but every step forward is a step toward self-empowerment so that you can create the life you want. And with that, I'm going to tell you, always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. I am grateful for you. I am so glad that we made it through this year. There may have been some suffering. There may have been some heartache. There may have been some tough times. But here we are. We're alive. We're breathing. And maybe we can look at that one small step of being alive and breathing as incentive to take the next one and make life better as we move into the new year, and take with us all of the lessons so that we don't have to repeat too many of them. It would be nice. And always remember something I absolutely know to be true about you. You are amazing.